Coming to you from the Flex Fox Fantasy Federation's studios in Holland Landing, Ontario, this is the weekly show. I'm your host, WizKid Jeremiah Johnson, and my esteemed guest this week is none other than no one. That's right, no one. Now, is this intentional? Is it an accident? Does nobody like me or want to answer on Slack? Let's pull back the curtain and discuss that, get some administrative stuff out of the way. After that, we have some recaps of the week one matchups, some trade analysis, Jerry's rants in the mid part of the podcast, and we'll conclude with a wrap up and the prediction for week two matchups. So, usually the past few years of the weekly show, we've had a rotating cast host from Nick to Jamil, myself, and to Garth in recent years. And so, Newton has had some familial stuff come up in his life, so he finds himself a more busy parent and will be on the show a little bit less often. So with that being said, here at Flex Fox Fantasy Broadcasting, we will be looking for an occasional host, someone who is on standby for a lot of weeks, somebody who is going to be available, say after 9, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, depending on the day of the week that we record. Obviously this week is later than most. So we usually try to plan to have the weeks like Monday, Tuesday, but sometimes the best laid plans go awry and it can be hard to coordinate schedules. So we are flexible with that. If there's a day of the week that you are particularly available, we can do that. And there's going to be some three ways because who doesn't love three ways? I've always wanted a three way. So there will be some three ways with Newton as well for whoever is willing to step in. And then obviously if we don't get somebody who's willing to do it on a regular basis, then I'll just reach out to people individually on a weekly basis and have a rotating cast of guests join me. I've also considered reaching outside of the league for some potential guests as well. And then there's going to be some weeks like this where you're listening to me. Which hopefully is fine for people. I mean, it's not going to be as entertaining as a conversation between two people, but I think my insights are valid, and I think I'll have some decent analysis for people to listen to. So, with that all being said, I think it's time that we jump into the week one matchups. And frankly, last week was in the Flex Fox Fantasy Federation. It was actually an interesting week. And so, typically, what we do is we begin here with the highest scoring team. And wouldn't you know it, I was the highest scoring team last week. Not surprising. I'm great. My team's just as great. And I got a victory for sobriety everywhere as I defeated Chris, the Addicted Gooner, 261.9 to 206.0. Takeaways from the matchup. I mean, if I told you, fun fact, that the top scoring players in this matchup would both be Japanese players, Seiya Suzuki and Shota Imanaga. I think that would surprise some people. And maybe it shouldn't, maybe maybe it shouldn't. But Chris got a lot of production across his board to get to his 206 points from guys that I would not qualify as being consistent performers going forward. Jojo Romero putting up 15 points. Kyle Gibson, I don't know how he even is good, but he put up 14.5. Connor Joe, there's no way he's going to be relevant at the end of the season. So a lot of smoke and mirrors for Chris. Still wasn't enough though, because my team is just clearly superior. 261.9, lots of good performances. Austin Riley, William Contreras, Seiya Suzuki, as I already mentioned. A lot of bullpen help. A lot of guys like Hunter Harvey and Adam Ottavino and Nick Sandlin coming through for me. Yeah, I mean, generally at a macro level, I don't want to overanalyze this. I don't want to brag too much about my successes because it's one week, but boy, it does sure feel like I'm on a path to contention. And Chris is just one of these teams, in my opinion, that is rudderless. Like it's just he doesn't have a direction. He's not great. He gets fluky wins. He gets absolutely crushed when it matters. And honestly, he's stuck with veteran players that, unless he's willing to sell off, he's just going to be in this no man's land, mid-tier Europa situation going forward. And we all know Chris isn't the most active owner on Slack. He'll never be confused as a tradeaholic manager. So Chris's options are limited. It's going to be interesting to see how he goes moving forward. I'm curious how he moves forward. But he takes an L in week one. I get off to a 1-0 start. Very happy with that. Hopefully carry the momentum forward. All right. Next matchup on the card. Second highest scoring team last week. None other than my dark horse, if you can even call him that, for the championship. Club Europo Deflex with 258 points, dispatching of Mike and the Illuminati, 206.3 for Mike. You know what? I again, like, surprising facts for people here. MJ Melendez, 25.4 points. Completely shocking to me because Melendez, I owned him last year. He was garbage. He was useless. I dropped him after getting him off Mike in the offseason of 2023. Melendez was unplayable with how bad he is. Spencer Cyr, absolutely monster week, 37.7 points for Flex. But it's the guys who are putting up the points for Flex that make it really interesting for me. Like Tyler Anderson, 19.5. John Schreiber, 15.5. Cade Smith, never even heard of him, 14.5 points. Scott Barlow, 14.5 points. Yeah, okay, Yamamoto's putting up 15, and like I said, Steer 37, but the big boys for Flex aren't even warmed up yet. Like, you look up and down the lineup, like Corbin Carroll, 0.1. Tell me that's going to keep happening. Logan Gilbert, 5.3. Right? Like, tell me that Logan Gilbert's going to put up 5 points in a week consistently. He's not, right? Yeah, Michael Harris, Riley Green, Logan Webb, 11 points. Logan Webb had a 2-star week and he only puts up 11 points. I mean, come on. He's going to do better. So what I'm getting at here is Flex's ceiling as a team is much higher than this because his big guns aren't even going. And these are the performances he's getting. If he gets the big guns on board with this, he's crushing 300 points a week. No problem. Undoubtedly 300 points. Top tier team, man. Like, he is a top three team. And that gets me on the subject while I'm thinking about it, a power ranking. So just a quick veer off the path here. Power rankings to me, like weekly power rankings, are stupid. My opinion isn't going to change drastically on 20 teams in 1 week. So I'm going to be doing power rankings bi-weekly and start with that. If I find that my opinion just isn't changing over a 2 week period, we'll kick it out. But Flex is one of the teams, man. He didn't have much higher to go in the list, but he's impressive so far. And on the flip side of this, Mike, right? 206 points for Mike. Nothing to sneeze at. But again, like, what's there, right? So Cody Bradford, 20.5 points. I don't know. Anthony Volpe, really interesting to me. 18.3 points. Is he breaking out? Is he actually going to be a good hitter? I know he can steal a base. That wasn't a problem last year, but is he going to be swinging out of his shoes at every pitch? It's a good question, right? Like, his exit velocities aren't great. His batted ball data is fine, but it's not. It's Cody Bellinger-esque in that it's not really supporting the breakout. So the question I think is Volpe legit? Is he breaking out? A good question for Mike to consider is maybe should he sell on Volpe? As we're going to discuss later in the show, he makes a big trade for another shortstop. So it's not like he doesn't have someone to fill that gap if he decides to move Volpe. Something for him to think about. Jarren Duran, man, I'm sure wishing I held on to him last year, but yeah, he's been great as well. 27.3 points for Mike. Jordan Hicks, as a starter, kicking ass. 13, 18, and 13 points, respectively, for a 14.7 point average. Yeah, you take that. Hunter Green as well. Like, there are some pieces on Mike's team, if we're being honest here, that are good, that are worthwhile. Now, is there enough there to be competitive this year? I don't think anyone's going to say that. But at the same time, could he challenge Europa this year? I think that's legitimate. I think that's a legitimate thing. Like, he can be in the bottom to mid tier of Europa and bite somebody in round one. And if you get in Europa and you get on a roll, who knows? So yeah, it's not the rivalry of old, but Flex versus Mike was a decent matchup. But let's leave that behind. Let's move forward. Ryan would be upset if he wasn't talked about in the first like 10 minutes of the podcast, and we're currently at 9 minutes and 44 seconds. So I guess we better talk about him because he did win his matchup, 223.9 to Graham's 175.0. Now, as someone who talks to Ryan privately on Slack quite a bit, someone who would consider himself a friend of the Mad King, Let me just say that Ryan has been unsatisfied with the performance of his bats, specifically Julio Rodriguez and Gleyber Torres. And Gleyber Torres, not terrible, 8.6 points. Ronald Acuna, 7 points. Trey Turner, 8 points. Julio Rodriguez, 2 points. I mean, Manny Machado, Mike, famous Machado hater, will be on board with this, minus 7.1 points. I mean, is this going to continue? Like, there's been seasons where Ryan's bats have been particularly bad, egregiously bad, but it's usually because they're injured, right? Or if they're chronically underperforming, they eventually come out of it. I don't know. Look, like his bats are the best in the league. No one's going to argue that. I don't think these guys sit on their hands and are just garbage for the rest of the year. I don't see that happening. I think guys like Olsen, I think guys like Acuna and Turner and Rodriguez, these are like top 20 players in baseball. In baseball, they're going to turn it around. And when they do, like if this is Ryan's floor, if we all say, well, this is kind of like the worst case scenario for him, 223.9 points. Holy shit. Like if that's his floor, then how can you not think he's the top team in the league? And I don't think anyone would disagree with that, but I just want to re-cement this point that Ryan is we're all running a race to the finish line, and Ryan got a 10-second head start in the 100-meter dash. And we're all trying to catch him. And that's just facts. That's just the fact of the matter. The sooner we all learn to deal with that, the better off we're going to be. And Graham found out firsthand, man. Firsthand. I mean, 175 points against Ryan just isn't going to cut it, right? 25 points from Reed Detmers. Ian Happ, 21.4. Jason Foley, nice draft pick, 16 points. Brooks Raley, who I drafted and then dropped clutch with 14 points. So, I mean, for Graham's got some tweaking to do. Graham is one of those teams where I think he didn't do enough in the offseason, right? So he trades away Brian Reynolds, trades away Randy Arozarena, he gets Gunnar Henderson, who, for all of you wondering out there how that went in week one, 4.9 points. Gunnar Henderson's going to be better. It's early. So many guys were saying it's early. And I know I rant about the Jays, about how bad they are. And people are going to say, it's early, it's early. It is early. It's 1 week into the season, 1 week a playoff team doth not make. I get all that. But if this is the kind of performances Graham is going to be churning out on a weekly basis, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. 175 points, that's a Europa team score. It's even a Vays team score, if you really think about it. 175 points isn't going to do it. It's not going to beat a lot of teams. It's not going to beat Ryan. And I'm not surprised. Like, as I was saying, Graham didn't do much in the offseason. He traded away some pieces. He got Gunnar Henderson. But outside of that, what did he do? Not a lot. Now, it's not because he's not trying. I see him in Slack all the time. One thing you cannot accuse Graham of doing is sitting on his hands. He's always trying to move guys, prospects here, picks there, whatever. And for some reason, it just hasn't worked out. And I feel for him in that regard. But if I'm Graham, I keep hitting the lines. I keep hitting Slack. I see if there's deals I can make because you can't let this season slip you by, right? He did the Europa thing last year. It didn't go great. He did the top five pick. It was fine, but he didn't really get a great pick. Time to do more than that, Graham. You can't just sit in Europa again. And so, yeah, no one's going to fault him for losing to Ryan. Ryan's going to take this W. Graham's going to take an L and chalk it up to better team, not his best week. What can you do? But the takeaways from this are twofold. Ryan is a monster. It's going to be great. This is his floor. I'm telling you now, it's his floor. You don't have to believe me. You don't have to like it, but it's a fact. And Graham needs to do something to shake things up. That's the takeaways here. Okay, enough of those guys. Let's get on to a matchup that we can get through real quick, the Garth Bowl. Garth Newton wasn't here, but he was there in that matchup because he saw Garth McInnes 204.3 to 111.3. And this one was not close from the get-go. Garth's top performers, Ketel Marte, 27.4 points. Zach Eflin, 17.5. Trevor Richards, nice, 17.5. On the flip side for Daddy Mac, Brendan Donovan, 26.2 points. Emmanuel Clase, 16.5. Giovanni Gallegos with 11.5. And I've said this before, and man, I'll say it again. Like, if your top three guys are predominantly relievers, it's going to be a problem for you. Like, that is my slogan, right? Because if your top guys are relievers, it says a couple of things. One, your bats were terrible, and your pitching was terrible, because relievers aren't the highest scoring players, potential wise, not even close, right? Like, if you have a good closer and he closes three or four times in a week, he's getting 6 points a shot. He's hitting 20 to 25 points. Fine. A good bat that has a monster week, a couple multi-home run games, is getting 40 or 50 points. A pitcher who's throwing like a shutout three-hitter and then another quality start, that guy's getting like 40 points. So if you don't see at least one, maybe two of those guys at the top of your list, it means your team didn't perform in the other areas of the game that matter. And so a reliever happened to be in the top spot. And that's 100% the case here with Garth MacInnis. Emmanuel Clase, Giovanni Gallegos. What does that tell me? Well, Tarek Skubal had one okay start. Steven Matz, one okay start. And the bats were just trash. Justin Turner, JT Realmuto, Bo Bichette, Matt Chapman, Spencer Torkelson. They're all bad. All of them. They're all bad. And if not the most crushing thing about Garth MacInnis' team, Spencer Strider going down. So he has Blake Snell. He's ramping up. He hasn't played yet. He's pitched now, but he hasn't played yet at this point in week one. Spencer Strider goes down. Probably needs Tommy John surgery. That is the toughest blow to a team this year. And it's not close. So I don't think it's particularly unwarranted to say Daddy Mac's playoff hopes disappeared the moment Spencer Strider's arm snapped. Because he doesn't have a lot of depth. He doesn't have a lot of guys. And so if he's not going to have his best pitcher and arguably his best player, then it's over for him. Like, you want to talk about a 500 season. He will be lucky to get to 500. I think he's going to be 7-12. We'll see how that goes. I don't know. But it's going to be tough for him. On the flip side, Garth Newton, he needs the win. These are the teams you got to beat, man. Like, if you're Garth Newton and you're trying to make the playoffs again, this is exactly the kind of team you got to beat. Ketel Marte doing good. Eflin Richards, Glasnow, Correa, Morton Schwarber, Berríos. His top eight scorers. Those are the guys you need to perform. And they did. To a degree, they did. Varying degrees, they did. 204 points, I think he would be the first to admit, is probably not going to cut it a lot of weeks. But it was enough to do it here, and they don't ask by how much, for the most part. Or how many points, for the most part, unless you're flex, clutching onto that points record every night. But he probably is going to have something else to clutch on very soon. So Garth Newton will take the W. Garth Newton and I are facing off this week. Are people going to be scared of Garth going into a week with a score like this? No, probably not. Does Garth Newton have players to make moves and picks and prospects? Yep. Should he make moves? Probably. Will he? I would say definitely. Garth Newton will not sit on his hands, and I'm very, very intrigued to see what he does next. All right, folks. Well, that covers the Newton Bowl. Let's move forward. I believe this is matchup number 5 of week 1. And that involved the Squirtle Squad and Tillo. And what a granny purse fight this was. 185.7 for the squad, 159.5 for Tillo. Top scorers for the squad, Bryce Harper with 26, Cole Reagans with 20, Zach Wheeler with 19. Top scorers for Tillo, 21.4 for Adolis Garcia, 20.3 for Mikel Garcia, someone I dropped and dropped. Mookie Betts 20.2. So, yeah, okay, the usual suspects, but it's the point totals here for me that are very, very concerning for both teams, right? 185.7 for the squad, 159.5 for Tillo. Look, in my first power rankings, I was not shy about articulating Tillo's demise, because I don't think his team is very good anymore. I think the bats are terrible. I think there's big holes at third base, at shortstop, at left field. he needs to fill. His pitching, which was a hallmark, a staple of his team, he was one of the best pitching staffs in the league, is banged up with injuries. You know, Gerrit Cole, super injured. As I take a look here, Gerrit Cole, super injured. Guys who are question marks, Frankie Montas, Chris Sale, Evan Phillips, is he going to close? David Bednar, Ryan Pressly lost his closer's job. I mean, what are these guys? What are they going to be? That's the question, right? And so I don't know if Tillo is nearly as scary as he was in years past. And I don't think he makes the playoffs. I don't think you can make the playoffs running replacement level guys at shortstop, third base, and left field. I just don't think you can do it. And he hasn't done anything. And I've roasted him in the power rankings and on pods saying, why didn't you do more? And then, you know, league management came out and defended him. Oh, we kept guys and they weren't, you know, we made him keep them. And it's like, well, okay, but why was he in that position? Still no answer to that. On the flip side for the squad, well, let's be honest here. Not their best performance. Not something they're going to look back on fondly, but they get the job done. You know, Paul Blackburn, it was good for them. Martin Perez, but when I go up and down this roster, yeah, it's got some guys. We've got Corey Seager, Will Smith, Christian Yelich. I always forget they have Christian Yelich. You know, Alex Bregman always starts slow, so he was negative that week. Yeah, there's positive regression coming here for sure, but there's also just holes on this roster. And one thing that Ryan, I think, mentioned last week on the podcast was the squad's prospect system is depleted. It's not as good as it was in years past. And the question is, can they make moves? Can they make trades to make things happen, to get better? Because when I look at this score, again, it's 1 week. These are all small sample sizes. But again, the job on the show is to analyze people's performances on a week-to-week basis. And when I look at the performance of the Squirtle squad this week, it is disappointing. It is concerning. 185 points will not beat most teams. Are they going to fall back on their laurels and hope for positive regression? Or are they going to do something about it? That's the questions that they got to answer. Okay, moving on. Let's go on to another purse fight. Ben and the Star Boys, 1-0, had 197.6 points, which was more than enough to see off Jeffrey Lim and Team 69 with 133.3. Can't say any of us are particularly shocked. Tyler O'Neill, monster week for Ben, 25.9. Edwin Diaz, 20.5. Taylor Ward, 14.4. Kyle Tucker, 14.1. And on the flip side for Lim, Logan Allen, 16 or 19.5. Luis Arraez, 16.3. Lane Thomas, 13.3. I don't want to waste a lot of time on this matchup, man. Like, Lim is what he is. He's a Vades slash last guy in Europa who's going to get crushed round one. And I don't think he cares. Like, Lim's got bigger fish to fry, man. This league is an afterthought to him. He's got a family. He's here to roast Ryan, and we're here for all of that. And on the flip side for Ben, I don't think we can draw anything conclusive about this for Ben. Like, 197.6 points, just like the squad's not going to cut it a lot of weeks, man. You need 200. You need 220, 230, 240. That ain't it. Kyle Tucker's got to be better, right? He's trying to move Max Fried. Why? Because he's been shit to start the year. He's been pretty much a negative pitcher to start the year. Xander Bogaerts basically been a replacement-level player. So, yeah, he's trying to move these guys. You know, he made a trade to get rid of Sandy Alcantara, and he got Jordan Lawler, and he got Edwin Arroyo. Can he flip those guys into something? I'm surprised Ben didn't go after Francisco Lindor, frankly, for example. Someone he could have used on his roster. Or Bryson Stott, considering he's playing Davis Schneider at second base. Like, these are the moves that you go and you look at a lot of these teams and you say, well, what the hell were they doing? Like, were they asleep at the wheel? Are they asleep at the wheel? Are they? Do they even care? I mean, I'm not here to roast Ben. The man's planning a wedding. Respect. Let this also be my platform to say that while I'm honored to be invited to the wedding, Ben, the fiance and I are also trying to get married a la Graham this year or early next year. And I don't think it's in the financial budget. And on top of that, I don't think the wife would or the fiance would be able to get the time off work for us to go. for us to do that as a couple. So I don't really want to go without her. So I'm going to also have to decline the invitation, not because I don't want to go. Lord, do I ever want to go? France would be sweet. But thank you for the invite, sir. Please, please, please send us lots of photos. I think that'd be awesome to post in the channel. People would love that. But yeah, unfortunately, I will not be able to go. I will post something in your channel relatively soon. I should. RSVP should be that person. So I will do that. But I just want this to be my official 2 cents that unfortunately, as much as I'd like to go, I won't be able to make it. I'll leave it at that because I don't want to harp on Ben here, harsh as mellow. He's planning a wedding. So is Graham. I just crapped on Graham. So maybe I need to be Graham. Don't take anything I said personally. But Ben, definitely don't take anything I said personally. You got the W this week, buddy. It's all that matters. The team could be better. If you can make a move, you definitely should do it. All right. Moving on to the next matchup. We have Nick the Man Penner and Kyle Ball. I had to think about that for a second. Kyle Ball. 245.5. More than enough to see off. I don't even know why he calls himself the director anymore. He just, what's he doing? I don't know. What? Aiden, 143.4. Wow. Okay. Tanner Houck, 44 points. Wow. Sean Manaea, 31.5. And Dane Dunning, 27.5 for the man. Flipside, Aiden, 23.0 for by Nate Evaldi, 22.1 for the Fishman, Mike Trout, and 19 for Zach Gallen. Okay, there's a few things to unpack here. One, Aiden ran into the buzzsaw that is Nick's random luck variance for his players. Tanner Houck, yeah, he's probably pretty good, but he's not going to be putting up 44 points. But this was what I was talking about earlier for the record. A two-star pitcher who puts 2 wins, 17 Ks, only walks two people with 7 hits over 2 starts. Yeah, that's about what 44 points looks like. And as you notice, Nick puts up 245, and I see 0 actual true relief pitchers in his top 5. Ryan Walker is the first true relief pitcher, checking in 6th. Coincidence, I think not. Sean Manaea, 31.5. Again, is Sean Manaea some like radically amazing new pitcher? I don't think so. There's been stretches of his career where he's been really good, lights out. Years in Oakland, for example. But he is who he is at this point, I think, which is a upper 3s, low 4s ERA guy. Dane Dunning, man, same deal. Like, do we really trust any of these guys to be this good every week? I would say no. So Nick maybe has a little bit of negative regression coming in for him, but the score is still very good this week, and he's got to be happy with it. On the flip side, for Aiden, Nate Evaldi doing his work. Joe Musgrove, 18 points as well. But it's the other guys, right? It's the Nolan Arenados. It's the Nolan Jones. It's the Mitch Kellers. It's Bobby Miller, who got absolutely torched. Kevin Gausman, -9. I mean, you get on his list. I'm just looking at his negative points here. -3.8 for Crawford and Outman. -4.5 for Bobby Miller. -7.1 for Max Kepler. -9 for Kevin Gausman. So we do some quick math here. 16, 20.5. Roughly 8 there. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's looking at like almost 30 points off the ledger just right there. So he's probably about 175 without those negative performances. But still, Aiden would be the first to tell you that score is disappointing. He's hoping for better. It's only 1 week. But I do want to say 2 things quickly. One, props to Nick and Kyle for throwing out 9 starts. I respect that. That is hard to do, especially when the streaming options on the wire are completely garbage. And for Aiden, 0 matchup acquisitions, 6 starts instead of 7. Are you, like, okay. I'm going to take a moment. I'm going to be Zen. But this is like Ash level almost in that there's no attempt to get the 7th start. There's no attempt to add guys to the roster that could get you a better score. It's like Aiden saw the matchup. It's like, fuck it, boys. I'm not winning this matchup. I'm not even going to try. Okay. I mean, we crapped on Ash for doing similar things. But I guess he gets away with it because he's a director. I mean, okay, fine. To put a bow on this, Nick, impressive performance, going to regress back a little bit for his score. Aiden, Hopefully, I don't think Kevin Gausman's going to be this bad. I don't think Bobby Miller's going to be this bad. So he's going to probably regress upwards. But for now, they've swapped in the perpetual order of things, and Nick gets a much-needed W. Okay, so three matchups left before we turn. I'm going to try to breeze through these. Bash Brothers 212, more than enough to see off the Midland Raccoons at 181.2. I don't want to spend too much time on these matchups other than to say Shane Bieber is a huge loss. Josh Young is a big loss. I traded both these players to Richard. I feel bad about it. Richard, I'm sorry. If there was a return policy option, I would do it, but there isn't. And Shane Bieber in particular is just ridiculous because he was pitching amazing. Went to Driveline all offseason, was great. Then he just randomly needs Tommy John. I mean, that's pretty suspect. It's pretty suspect. But Zach Eloff for Richard, top score 24.3. The aforementioned Bieber 22, and Brady Singer. Brady Singer, man. And like, okay, so his matchups have been pretty good. Minnesota, Chicago, the White Sox, and Houston. And he put up 24, 16, and 8. Okay, probably about what you would expect. But man, he's on a heater. I had dropped him last year. I thought he was fodder. I left him for dead. Apparently, he's good. Apparently, Brady Singer is good. So, okay. On the other side of things, the Raccoons, I don't know how good they're going to be this year. My guess is not very when Luis Gil and Jorge Soler and gasp, Marcus Stroman are leading your team with 21, 18.3, and 18 points, respectively. Yeah, bottom tier Europa for me. Probably not bad enough to fall into the base, but definitely bottom tier Europa. Yeah, I think that's pretty much where they sit. And I think it's really interesting that we had them last year as like, I think they were undefeated, like first five matchups. We had them like, they were in the playoffs. Yeah, they were somebody everybody wanted to face, but they were in the playoffs. They were doing well, and how the mighty have fallen, I guess. As people know, I have Richard fairly high in the rankings. I think the injuries to Bieber and Josh Young are crippling. I think when I look at his team, like he did not really have a lot of underperformance. Like Josh Hader, okay, Jung Ho Lee still getting his feet wet, so a negative performance isn't completely ridiculous. But other than that, got pretty much what you would expect. And yeah, I'm kind of just noticing this, but the 50-point penalty for not calling someone up costs the Raccoons basically the victory, and that to me is a problem. Like, again, like this was explained on Slack, so I get it, I accept the explanation. But Chris getting a completely free pass for finding and failing to find, sorry, and failing to find DL Hall on the sheet because of some dots is a much more egregious offense than somebody not announcing a call up in Slack. And a 50-point penalty of all things ends up costing them the matchup. I mean, that's not right. I'm sorry, that is backwards. That is not the spirit, in my opinion, of the rules. You know, like it's just not what it's meant to be, man. Like, okay. He was DL Hall on the sheet, but he's D dot L dot Hall. Like, who cares, man? Control F Hall. Hall. And you'll find the fucker in the sheet. That's just like pure fucking laziness, man. Pure fucking laziness. And then we have two guys who are running a team and they're not very good and they want to call up a prospect because, you know, they're not very good. And oh, they don't announce it in Slack? 50-point penalty. Well, we warned people last year. Well, did you warn them? And was a 50-point penalty really necessary? How about 10? How about 15? It's clearly a less egregious offense than fucking drafting someone else's prospect. Like, where's the perspective here? It costs these guys the matchup. It just irks me, man. It just upsets me. We need to move on because things are going to get out of hand here. I'm going to be upset. Last two matchups, I want to talk about each of them together as one piece very quickly. So Jamil and the Husan Alliance, 247.4, beats Ian and the Salomon Stars, 206.4. And Jeffrey Chow, Chateau de Fay, 237.5, beats Tyler's Bomb Squad, 151.4. Chow and Jamil, the theme here for me with these two is they both performed a lot better than I thought. For Chow, Marcelo Zuna, Aaron Judge, Michael King, Ryan Helsley. The top point getters for Tyler, Jeremy Pena, Dylan Cease, Drew Smiley, Miles Michaelis. And to be quick about this, Freddie Peralta, Fernando Tatis, George Kirby having a horrible start to the season, George Springer being pretty fucking flaccid to start the season. Like, it's tough out there for Tyler. He did make a trade to get, I believe, a second baseman. But, like, man, it's tough out there for him. And that team seems cursed. Chow on the other side of things, like, I don't know, man. He's dealt off a lot of pieces. And here he still freaking is, like, the man who will not die. And that's before Vinny Pasquantino decided to absolutely go off in Houston the last couple days. It turns out just getting out of Kansas City is enough. Big shocker. But Chow is legit, man. Like, I need to move him up in my rankings, because if this is the kind of performance he's going to put up with a guy who traded away Corbin Burns and Shane McClanahan and et cetera, Jordan Romano, I got to rethink how I look at his team, because he hasn't sold off completely. It's not rebuild time. It might not even be retool time. It might just be shedding a snake, shedding its skin, and being fucking badass underneath. I don't know. But that's where we're at. Chow has earned my respect with this victory. It's a impressive performance. Yeah, Trevor Story going down for probably the year is bad, but Chow's got more than enough assets to make moves to supplement his team if he wants, and I bet you he's sitting there just watching the results, seeing what happens, and deciding how to go from there. And then for Jamil, like I said, dispatched to Ian, not a shock. Jamil's top scorers, Michael Wacha, Garrett Crochet, and Bryce Miller. Oh, man. I gotta stop trading away, guys. Because Bryce Miller is another guy I traded away. And, my God, he adds a splitter, I think, and a sweeper. And, of course, he just lights up the Brewers. So, awesome. Ian, Shohei Ohtani, Dean Kramer, and Ryan McMahon. Okay. Yeah, I mean, Ian's team is not very good. Dean Kramer, Ryan McMahon, those guys are not performing this year. Like, I'm sorry, they're just not. Ian is in Europa. He has, like, four good players. My opinion on him has not changed. Jamil, hard to say it changes as well. I mean, Michael Wacha. Every time I hear Wacha, I think of, like, Shakira. Wacha, Wacha, hey. But, like, yeah, clearly nobody's buying it because he's got 15.3 points as an average and it's 18% owned. So other people are like, yeah, fuck that too. I'm with those people. Waka's probably not going to be great the rest of the season. Garrett Crochet, very interesting, very awesome. Although, after taming Atlanta and Detroit, two teams that are off to good starts, Kansas City dusting them off, so we'll have to see. But the other guys for Jamil could be good, like Ohapi and Miller and... trying to see who else he has here. Westberg, Morel, like, those guys are interesting. Jamil has interesting pieces. And I think, for me, like, I would put Jamil, maybe I need to move him up a bit. I think he probably belongs in the mid to upper tier of Europa. You can win Europa. You can totally win Europa. We'll take him over Ian by a fair amount. Yeah. Okay, well, with that being said, I think that wraps week one. So I do want to talk about a couple trades super quick before I make my picks for week two. So we did have a few trades. So I'll just say these two together and we'll talk about them. But I traded with Mike. I traded Tanner Bibee and picks to Mike for Tristan McKenzie, Kendall George, Noblemeyer, and Anthony Solometto and picks. And Mike then flipped Tristan McKenzie to Nick and Kyle for Francisco Lindor. There was also a swap of picks. A fourth to the man and tenth to Mike. You know, it's rare that I ever look at a trade and I go, I should have done more. But that was one of them. Like I like Tanner Bibee, right? Like, Tristan McKenzie has had arm problems. I was worried about that. I thought Tanner Bibee doesn't have arm problems. Turns out he just sucks. it'll just suck. But, you know, I have hope that Bybee can at least be healthy this year. Knock on some wood that you find laying around. So great. But being able to turn around and take an asset like Tristan McKenzie, who granted has ace upside, and turn him into Francisco Lindor is astounding to me. Like, Francisco Lindor was Nick and Kyle's best piece to launch a retool, a rebuild, or an all-in. I get it. He's having a garbage start to the season. But getting one injury-prone pitcher who is coming off of depressed value, like, that is a problem. You should be getting two or three of those guys and elite prospects and picks. Like, if I'm Nick and Kyle, I'm going, okay, you can have Lindor, but I want Cole Keith, I want Tristan McKenzie, I want an LM1, a 16, and a third subsidiary piece. Like, okay. But the return that they got feels awful light. So light, in fact, that somebody decided that they were going to complain to league management. And as someone who has been through the process of league management busting down your metaphorical door, asking you for negotiation messages and texts and proof that you basically are not colluding, like, trust me when I say it's not a good time. And I am steadfast in the idea that if you make a complaint about a trade, you should have to stand by that complaint. Now, some leagues, I know this is not one of them, some leagues allow vetoes on trades, and they're published vetoes. So if half the league vetoes a trade, it's no good. But they're published. The identity is published. You know exactly who vetoed your trade, right? And I'm not saying we give everybody a veto. Like, fuck that. But if you're going to complain about a trade and launch an investigation and make somebody who's in this league for fun and competition and to have a good time to divulge their personal discussions, to get that evidence to defend themselves, you should have to at least put your name out there. Point blank, period. Do I think I know who it is? Yeah, I do. Am I certain? No. Do I think this person has made more than one complaint? Absolutely. Do I think this person makes complaints about lots of trades? Absolutely. Do I think that they get joy out of complaining about trades because they're not included in them? Absolutely. So maybe this person, whoever they are, should look inwards at themselves and go, huh, maybe if I was more active and I thought more about it, put in effort, I too could make trades like this. And again, publish the damn names, for God's sake. And for Mike, congratulations. This is a great deal for you. It's nice to see you win a deal. Nick and Kyle, it's disappointing. Clearly you have a strategy that I don't agree with, but that doesn't mean it won't be successful and it won't be right. As league management has said in their post on Slack, just because the value could go either way, you know, it could go either way. So, okay. Like, I don't see it that way. I think it's very unlikely to go one way, but that's fine. That's fine. So let's move on to the other trade, which flew under the radar, and that was Nick again dealing a Bryson Stott and a 9th-round pick to Tyler for a 5th-round pick. And again, I think, like, this is a prime deal where two managers – I think it's very clear that Kyle's running the man. And I think it's clear that, you know, these are two GMs learning the ropes of the league. I remember when I joined the league, excuse me, back in 2016. Everything could happen in 2016. My fiance joined the league. That I think these guys are filling themselves out. They don't know the value of picks per se. Bryson Stott, again, I'd want more than a 5th-round pick for Bryson Stott, personally. You know, Bryson Stott, bad start to the season as well, but, like, he plays second base, which is a position a lot of people need, Tyler included. I have a feeling that Kyle could have gotten more than a 5th. So, Kyle, if you're listening, my advice to you is ask clearly for more than you think you can get, because what you think you can get right now is low in value. Picks, major league picks, at least in my opinion, not as much value. Low minors picks, especially low minors ones, valuable. High minors ones can be valuable if they fall at the top of the draft, because as we saw last year, guys like Wyatt Langford and Dylan Cruz and Paul Skeens went 1, 2, 3 in the high minors draft. So if you can try to eyeball somebody who you think will fall at the top of the minors, high minors draft, someone who wins Europa or something like that based on the odds, try to snipe that. Otherwise, like, man, try to get, I don't know, prospects, like, look at their farm systems, do a bit of research, say, hey, I want that prospect and that prospect. Prospects are ultimately, for the most part, lottery tickets, so you want as many of them as you can get, but the high-end ones are especially valuable. Like, this is my advice to you to move things forward and to do better in future trades. Okay, keeping things moving, because the app is telling me we only have 15 minutes, let us get to week number 2's matchups. So I'm just going to run through and make quick predictions. I unfortunately did not add up the records of last week for Ryan and I. I will do that for next week, and I will include them in the podcast. I'm trying to load up week 2 matchups unsuccessfully, unfortunately. My app hates me, so I'm going to have to stall here while I try to load up the app. But to go back to the trading point view, again, I think, you know, trading is difficult, especially when you're a new owner. Trading is very difficult. I get Kyle's, you know, feeling his way out of the league for that. Totally get it. I've done the exact same thing myself, so I understand. Okay, moving on to week 2. We have loaded up the matchups. I will start super quickly and get this done. So we'll start with my matchup. I'm taking on Garth Newton, currently up 137.5 to 98. Newton's closed the gap, but I am confident in myself here, and so I will take myself. Jamil and Tyler are facing off. Jamil, 118.1, currently up over Tyler's 102.9. And again, based off of what we saw from Jamil last week, I just have a very difficult time betting against him, even with only a slight lead. I think he has some extra starts coming up this weekend, and I'm not confident Tyler is a very active manager. So for that, I will take Jamil. Next matchup, we have Chow. Chateau de Fay is absolutely crushing the Midland Raccoons, 175.8 to 98. Yeah, I want to make a cute pick. It's not going to happen. Chow's up 80 points, basically. He's not going to ruin Christian's league. Chow's team is crushing it, and he's not going to give this up. So give me Chow in the matchup by a lot. The next matchup, the Stadel Monstars and the Man. The Stadel Monstars are currently up 99.7 to 96.4, and despite trading away Francisco Lindor, the Man is on the comeback trail. McKenzie's going to pitch this weekend. Justin McKenzie's going to pitch this weekend. He's facing the Yankees. I think he has a bounce-back start. You know, Stephen Kwan is heating up. He's up to 3 points per game, 36 points overall. I just think the talent on the Man is better than the talent on the Stadel Monstars. I mean, I get they have Ohtani, they have Guerrero, but give me the Man. Better week last week, and I'm going to take that to the bank. Next matchup, we have the Bash Brothers and the Star Boys. The Bash Bros are currently up 119.8 to 75.2. Man, like, Brian Abreu for the Star Boys, just a sign up, has been terrible. Anyway, Grayson Rodriguez getting screwed out of a quality start at 5.2 innings. That sucks. Brady Singer, just only 8 points tonight. Okay. I'm still going to go with the Bash Bros. I think the team talent is higher. I think even with injuries to guys like Bieber Young and Lorenzen and Duran, that the Bash Bros are a better team. I'm going to have to take them here. No questions asked. Next up, we have the director of the FFFBA and Addicted Gooner. Well, we know I'm never picking Chris, so we can just move past this. Like, Aiden's up 139.5 to 94.2, and even if it was the other fucking way around, I wouldn't pick Chris. Aiden gets the W. Next up, Lim, Team 69, 68.9 to is behind, sorry, 68.9 to Richard's 75.4. I'm gonna call an upset special on this. I don't normally call upset specials too often. I try to do it once a week, but I'm gonna take Lim here. Tillo's banged up. Lim has some starts this weekend. It's not like this is an insurmountable lead. It's like less than 10 points, 7, 8 points. Like, give me Lim. Why not? Miracles do happen, friends. Give me Lim. Gut feeling, going with it. Next up, we have the Mad King and Garth MacInnis. And the Mad King is doubling up, Daddy Mac, 118.5 to 65.5. Can't say I'm surprised whatsoever. Ryan, although he perpetually bitches about his team, very, very good team. Austin Winans, who he picked up, got absolutely destroyed by the Mets today. So there's that. His pen, not great today, but nonetheless, he's still up about 55 points, and I just don't think Daddy Mac has the guns to come back. Ryan, if his bats ever decide to get it together, are going to be fantastic. So I'm gonna go with Ryan. I feel very confident in that. I don't want to just lock Ryan in every week, so I won't lock him in this week because I think it's just bull to lock Ryan in every week. But he gets the W, and if I wanted to be boring, I would lock him. And it's the pick of the week. Second last matchup, the penultimate matchup, as Garth Newton would say, is the Illuminati taking on big beefy baseball boys, and it's the Illuminati, man. 123.5 to Graham 66.3. What is going on here? I want to know. I really want to know. Don't you know what? I don't know what's going on. So if I look at the matchup total summary so far, Cody Bradford, the guy who I was talking mad shit about, is going off. Damn, he has had three good starts, but it's against Oakland, the Cubs, and the Astros, so okay. Jordan Hicks still playing great. Alec Bohm, Keegan Aiken. I'm gonna go with Mike, and I'm gonna make Mike my lock of the week because this gap is huge. Graham has more talent than Mike does, but not so much that I would just allow him a comeback based on that talent. I think it's going to be close, but I think Mike wins the matchup like 180 to 160. I think Graham's going to have a low scoring week. I think Graham is going to have a disappointing week, and I think Mike's going to do just enough to get the matchup over the hump and get her done. Yeah, give me Mike. Locking in is my lock of the week. Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. Last matchup, and it is a barn burner between best friends, league management, turned enemies. Flex and Club de Europo de Flex is facing off against the Squirtle Squad, and right now Flex is on top 128.8 to 114.7. Brandon Nimmo, 10 points tonight, making her close. Bryce Harper doing his best to undo that. This is a tough one. Flex, negative 8.7 points tonight. Oh yeah, Hunter Brown. That's what's up here. Hunter Brown, negative 16 points. Hunter Brown, man, might have the worst start I've ever seen. That's probably the worst start I've ever seen in fantasy baseball. Negative 16 points, negative 5.5 against Texas. So his record has to be like negative 5 his points average. Anyway, Hunter Brown is terrible. I'm still gonna go with Flex. I think despite Hunter Brown's colossal ineptitude, Flex has more talent. Flex is my dark horse this year to win the championship. He's top three in my power rankings. I cannot abandon him for a lower ranked team. The only team I would probably pick against Flex for is a team that, excuse me, a team that is just crushing him by the time I do the weekly show, or Ryan. Other than that, I can't go against him. I'm gonna take Flex. I will not be shocked for the record if the squad wins, but I think Flex is going to win. So I will tally up my marks from week one. I will tally up my marks for next week's show, week three. I will do my best to have a guest for everyone because I know you are probably sick of listening to my voice. I also know that I owe everyone a rap track for not getting these matchups correct last year. So I need an app, if anyone has any suggestions to give me background beat, because what I do is I like to listen to the beat of like the tracks on this app, and then I will like track lyrics and flow based off of that. Not that I'm anywhere near a professional, but that's just how I've done it in the past. And it's been so long that last time I was writing the rap, I was studying for the LSAT, so there was some extra vigor maybe in those verses, but we can bring it back. It's been a while. We can get her back. But that does it for this week's episode of the Weekly Show. Thank you all for listening. I'm sorry you've had to listen to my voice for 55 minutes, and I'm sorry if at times that this felt like I rushed through it, but it's a lot to get through for one person. So I'm hopeful that next week we will have a guest. I'm going to try my absolute hardest. If anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, whether they're a new owner, co-owner, secondary owner, I don't really care. You don't have to be in the damn league. If you're some random person in France listening to this and you want to be on the show, please reach out to me on Slack. Or if you're not in the league, then I guess drop me a line on this podcast app on Spotify. Otherwise, till next week, everyone, good night and good fantasy.